Paranormal Rabbit Hole. I hope you enjoyed the Halloween episode we did, The Bell Witch. It was a fun episode, a little local legend. And I'm not going to lie, I'll probably dive a little deeper into that, go back over it with a lot more detail. But I just kind of wanted to get out the cliff notes at this time. There was a lot of it, and there's so much that I wanted to get it out for a Halloween episode. And I said, you know, I'm going to revisit it, do a lot more detail, way more. Am I Mr. Ed here? Nobody cares about that, right? Everybody's like, what the fuck is Mr. Ed? What the hell? Unless you know, and then you know. But no, it was one of those where I just wanted to get it out for the Halloween episode as a kind of a local legend, spooky, true ghost story. You know, this actually happened, and it's documented. So that you know, even Andrew Jackson interacted with it. So yeah. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. Today I'm just going to kind of give... This show's going to be cliff notes as well, because I wanted to talk about something that I was told to watch. Okay, so this is kind of my bare bones review, because there's two seasons, and I really don't want to give everything away, so you will watch the seasons. But also at the same time, there's enough to share that it doesn't give enough away that you're not like, oh my God, you're like, oh, okay, this is where. So there will be some spoilers, yes, but not enough to be like, oh my God, it ruins the entire thing. So it's not that at all. But I did kind of want to talk about it and kind of go over some things that I saw and you know, what I thought. My personal opinion, if you will, of this. And since it's, and like I said, it's a bare bones review because it's just me. If I had somebody else that had watched it with me and we could review it together, like, you know, sometimes I'll have, my co-host Jared, he'll come by, and visit sometimes. I think he's only been by for two, to be honest. But yeah, anyways, but we, you know, if I get him to watch, we can review, or if I can get me and some other paranormal people together and kind of review each one, you know, not each episode, but a broader overall, you know, kind of a thing. That way, if you guys come back, you'll be like, oh, I've seen this. Oh, I heard this first episode he did. Now he's going to, recap it. And maybe, I don't know. Probably not, to be honest. It's kind of like that, what was his name? That documentary by that guy who was being abducted by aliens and he caught it peeping in his window. Like Rob Gribenack or something like that, or I can't remember. He ended up being really weird and ridiculous and like manipulating his wife. So anyways, it's just weird. But this is a review of Hellier. I watched seasons 1 and 2 of Hellier, and I just kind of wanted to talk about it. But before we get into that, business as usual, guys. You know how this goes down. If you want to drink and catch up, you know, do that. I've only had two, so there you go. Just drink one. And then sip the other one slowly and enjoy the podcast. But, again... The Paranormal Rabbit Hole Podcast. All one word. Type it in your search bar on Instagram. Pull it up. Follow us there. We post about the episodes. So, yeah. That's fun. And also, you can tell us what you want us to cover next. And guess what? We'll research it. Do the best we can. But to get back to it. Oh, also, 5-star reviews help us, guys. It helps us get out there, get listeners. Podbean, Spotify, Amazon, Apple Podcast, all those great podcasting platforms. Just go on there, give us a 5-star rating. And if you're on Apple, give us that 5-star and also a great review. But yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about Hellier. So Hellier is a case, if you guys are familiar, I kind of glossed over a small case. I covered in alien sightings just because the people who witnessed it, I think they think it was aliens. Me, I'm skeptical of the alien part, but I believe they saw something. I believe they saw some small creatures. Maybe these creatures have been hiding in caves for a long time and have existed here for a long time. You know, who knows? But, of course, I'm talking about the Hopkinsville, Kentucky case, the Sutton case in Hopkinsville, where the Sutton family was attacked by small men wearing, you know, I think they were wearing silver suits and they had big ears and big eyes and you know, they were out there in the forest coming at the house and looking in the windows and you know, startling the family and I think messing with the family. In that case, the family went to the sheriff. The sheriff saw signs of the struggle and was like, okay, something's going on. And when they left, they said the things came back. And so when they left in the morning and they kind of left the house for a little bit. And they said when they went back finally, they kind of just thought it over, lived there for a few more years and then abandoned it because nothing really happened. But they just, you know, went on about their business. Kind of they moved off. So that's pretty much a huge cliff note of the Hopkinsville case because that case is so amazing. And like I said on that episode, I'm going to cover it in full a little more down the line. I want to work on that as a bigger, better, you know, episode for you guys. Cause I really love that one. I love that case and how, you know, the family just, you know, decided, you know what, we're done with this. We're going to go to the cops. And I'm like, yep, no, that's legit because that's what I would do. I'd be like, you know what, I'm done. Hey, sheriff, check this out. We need you to chill out and, you know, check this out. But I wouldn't, I'd be like, look, I just want you to do us this favor. Stay here with us overnight. Just sit here with us. And if they don't come back, we're fine. If they do, you'll see we're right. You won't think we're crazy. Because that's my legit reasoning for keeping the sheriff there is like, okay, if he comes back, if these things come back and the sheriff sees them, we're not crazy. If he sees them, we've got some issues. That's what I would have done. But they, you know, in that time, the sheriff was probably like, you know, there's obviously something going on, but there's nothing going on right now. Maybe it's calmed down. If it's not, they'll come back and get us, and we'll have to go back out there. So that's probably what ended up happening. So that case is kind of a background for what we're going to cover a little bit in what they cover in Hellier. So the whole premise of Hellier is that God bless is that somewhere in Hellier, Kentucky, in a little town of Hellier, Kentucky, there is a doctor that is living, I can't exact. He doesn't. I don't actually think he says that he's living on a property that's in a house that's near a small mine shaft. And the doctor's name is David. Now, and he's writing to Newkirk. So Greg and Dana. They are a husband and wife team that go around investigating the paranormal there are actually several husband and wife teams because, you know, it's just you tend to float towards each other and find each other. Except for me, I found the one woman who doesn't really believe in the paranormal. So, David kind of talks about the goblins in his letter. Now, the letter basically goes, you know, hey, I know you deal with this kind of thing. I was told that you deal with this, so I'm writing to you to tell you my story. I bought this property up in Kentucky. It's, you know, big property with a mine shaft at the back that's, you know, supposed to be, you know, collapsed. Well, you know, we hear weird noises coming out of it, and, you know, and then we see footsteps and these strange footsteps, and he sends them pictures of the footsteps and of the footprints. Sends him pictures of footprints and of these little blurred strange, odd images that if you look at them, you're like, am I missing something here? Is this an I Spy? Do I need to go out of focus? Oh, they're going to highlight it. What is that? They highlight these things and you still can't really tell what you're looking at. Like, it's, you've got to suspend disbelief a little bit to see what they're trying to say is what it is. So, and again, this is just personal opinion. This is just personal opinion, but I look at those pictures, like some people said, oh man, Bane was really hard to hear in The Dark Knight Rises. And I was like, no, I could hear every word easily. You really couldn't hear him? Because I could hear him. And they were like, well, he's muffled. I was like, yeah, nope, I can still hear him. Do you need subtitles when people from Scotland talk? You know, I'm just, and if you do, I'm not trying to say that you, I'm just saying that some people can see things that others can't. And some people can hear better than others, even though you're like, I couldn't hear him. I'm like, no, I heard him pretty well. Heard him pretty well. Well, it's good that they cleaned it up. I was like, yeah, but before they cleaned it up, it wasn't that bad. He wasn't that muffled. Like the plane, they, you know, anyways. But, you know, those pictures, you got to kind of go, oh, okay. No. Okay. Oh, that's what that's supposed to be? Okay. I guess. You know, the footprints are actually a little more interesting because they're very prominent and they're very three-toed, but it kind of, you could, again, you could build a cast. You can build a cast with a dermal ridge, and Bigfoot people will take a cast of it and think it's real. I mean, you can 3D print anything now, so guess what? You want to fake some Bigfoot evidence? Ka-ching. Ka-ching. I don't like when the pictures that I see are like so dark and blurred that you can't even tell what's in the background. It's like, oh, well, it's on a tree. Is it? 'Cause I can't really tell. I can't tell if that's a figure on a tree or if that's just you taking a picture of a little thing distant. I mean, it's like every Bigfoot picture you see, you can't really tell what it is. It's super dark and super blurred. Like, he took these at night without flash, so that's bad enough as it is. So it could be anything. He could put a cardboard cutout of anything up and take pictures and be like, here it is. And that's the problem, is you can't tell if it is a physical thing you can't tell because it's so blurry and so bad. And that's just me just being honest. It's just really, I mean, for me, and I'm not saying I have the best vision, but I do, you know, I do go to the doctor to get it corrected if I need it corrected. You know, I wear glasses if I need glasses. I wear contacts if I need contacts. I go without if I don't. Whatever. My vision is good. My vision's good. So I don't see it. I'm sorry. Like I said, I Spy maybe where I got to cross my eyes and, you know, back out of focus and then you can see the 3D image. Probably. But Greg and Dana, you know, are like, okay, well, we're interested because he starts saying, well, you can hear these little, what I call the kids, you know, running around outside in the yard and, you know, whistling. You know, you see them and they're like these little hobgoblin creatures with big ears is essentially what he says. Big eyes, big ears. So, think of a gray alien that looks like Gizmo from Gremlins, but without hair. And lanky and 3 feet tall, like a frog-like creature with big ears. Very strange. I've put up a picture of him. Check the Instagram page, Paranormal Rabbit Hole Podcast. All one word in the search bar. I don't know what that was. Enjoy. It's like Macho Man. That's like Macho Man. I'm going to be down here. You know, he goes low and high. He's very calm, and then he gets excited. Sorry. The ramblings of a madman. Anyways, that case, you know, from Hopkinsville, it has the same kind of features. Big ears, kind of frog-like, very lanky, 3 feet tall. They didn't really talk. I don't remember the Hopkinsville case talking about sounds made. So I can't attest to that. But to be honest, I mean, it said these things chirp so and whistle. So, I mean, that's a good form of communication, clicks, whistles, and chirps. Because, you know, people hunt using clicks, whistles, and chirps. Animals hunt using click, whistles, and chirps. Easy communication form. So, not far-fetched for something to communicate that way. Just saying. But he writes that he, you know, he doesn't want to shoot at him or anything. He doesn't want, he basically goes on and on and on and ends up saying, you know, I'd love for you to come, you know, talk to me. And then I think they get maybe one more letter and then that's it. David just disappears. So Greg and Dana go to Hellier and start asking around. You know, of course, they get the atypical, you know, harsh stares at first. Like, and Hellier in real life, Hellier is a small town, a very small town, very rural. If you don't belong, you will be watched. And that's everybody. If you're just from outside that community, doesn't matter your race, religion, or creed, or color. They just don't like outsiders, period. And Kentucky is also one of those places where if you go up into the hills and hollers, boys and girls, I'll say this, be very careful when you're investigating. If you're going to places like up in the mountains and hills and out in like as far away from cell phones as possible, have a local person that you can trust, that you know well, that will, you know, guide you to a place where you can go and, you know, they know someone and they'll, you know, let you be on their land. Don't ever just go up and assume you can be on somebody's land. That's number one. Numero uno. Just number one. Never go on, and especially in Kentucky, because there are places where people will disappear, and it's because people will make them disappear. Not because of Bigfoot or any monsters. I mean, they're monsters, but they're also just men who are monstrous. Like, I mean, they do terrible things. If you show up on their property, you're not supposed to be there. They'll shoot you, they'll bury you, and that's it. They'll make your car disappear, they'll make you disappear, and that's all you can do. Nobody will find it, nobody will find you. Don't do that. If you know somebody up there, if you know somebody up that way that can get you in close with people, that's a safe way. Because that's all familiarity. That's rare, though. So, to be clear, don't do it, period. Like I said, those of us that have connections can do it because we know people up there. We know we can trust these people and we've, you know, trusted them before. So if you have those people up in, you know, these hills and hollers, as they say, then yeah, you're safe, but not very many people are going to do that. Just to be clear, all the expert paranormal investigators are not going to do that. They're not going to do that. What they did, what Greg and Dana did, is very, very plausible and very logical. Is they went to a gas station, asked questions, just said, hey, man, could we ask you a question like, have you ever seen Bigfoot or something like that? And they'll, you know, that gets people kind of opened up going, well, that's a funny question. But, yeah, I've seen big, you know, it kind of, it opens up a floodgate because if anybody hears that and they have seen Bigfoot, then they're going to go, well, there was this one time I was camping, you know, or there was this one time I was walking down the creek. We used to just run out to creek, out in the back. It opens up doors. And then people, you know, go, well, hey, I know this guy. I'll call him and, you know, he can come down and meet you. And, you know, that guy will bring him down and he'll be like, oh, well, hey, this is this person and this person. They want to know about this. And they'll go, finally, someone I can tell that will believe me. And they'll open up and then they'll go, well, hey, you can come up on my property. We'll take you up there. You know, usually that means that you're safe because a lot of people aren't going to go down there and drag you up there unless they are just, I mean, now that doesn't mean do it. That doesn't mean do it whatsoever. Always be like, here's what I would do. I'd be like, oh, thank you. I appreciate that, man. But maybe next time, but let me get your number. Let me get your phone number so I can give you a call. Safest way to play that one. Next time you go, hey, man, you good? You want to meet up and tell me that story again? I just want to hear it again. you know, and just kind of get familiar with them. And always make it a public place. Always make it public. Always make it public if you meet with someone where you can be safe. I mean, randomly, relatively safe nowadays. But, you know, that's just paranormal investigating 101. Never go up into the hills and hollers alone unless you can trust someone. And if you're going to do that, have a sidearm. Even if you don't like guns, have a sidearm. Have a big knife. Carry a bat. Carry a big stick. I mean, if you're going after Bigfoot, carry something anyways because you never know what could happen. But always have something on you that you can defend yourself with. Preferably a projectile weapon because, let's face it, a knife's not going to do much against a person with a gun or Bigfoot, except piss them off. So, just, again, personal opinion. But back to Hellier, you know, they go down to the gas station, ask questions, meet people, and then they just kind of start driving around and staying on the roads, which if you're going to go up into the hills by yourself, that's smart, because if you stay on the roads, you're safe. Nobody's going to, nobody's going to go out into the road and cause a scene. They're going to stay on their land and defend that little sliver as long as you don't pull into their driveway. But they don't do that. They kind of drive around. They look for places. They find some abandoned places. And then they start going around and just looking at old mines and old tunnels. And they start doing kind of like a spirit box thing. At first, they start out on porches and things, and they get a few keywords like can and, you know, this and that. And then they get, you know, they go down and do, a God box session where they cover their eyes and, you know, just, I think it is. But anyways, all of this, and they do all of these things where they talk and they, you know, give off these key phrases from these otherworldly entities. They never say they're ghosts. They just say they're communicating with something out there. Now, the spirit box stuff, and that's rough. The God box stuff, I'd like to try myself. It essentially lets you kind of balance yourself, apparently, on a borderline to be able to see the paranormal. That's where you take the ping pong balls, cover your eyes, and you have the red light. And you can... It's almost hallucinatory, but at the same time you're able to see some things, so it's supposed to teeter. So I'd love to experience it. I'd also love to see someone experience it, so because I'd love to investigate while they're experiencing. That would be my key goal. So anyways, they kind of do that stuff around these old abandoned places and these old tunnels and mines in Kentucky, and they get some strange results. But one thing that sticks out to me in this first episode, and I'm going to be real honest, is that you could make a very interesting drinking game from this show. Take a shot or take two shots every time they say the word paranormal. Take a shot every time they say the word Indrid Cold. And take a shot every time someone says y'all. Take a big old double shot every time they say the word synchronicity. Or, no, I'm sorry, it's a synchronicity. Oh, that's a synchronicity. That's a synchronicity. That's their favorite word in that whole movie is synchronicity. Like, oh, and a lot of paranormal people are picking that up. I don't blame them. It does help explain a lot of our cases, how they, and what's very funny is it does explain a lot of how we work. Is we work and find these synchronicities in the investigation that lead us down these tunnels. So it's really interesting, but it's just, they use that word, like, you don't have to use it as much as they use it. And they use it a lot. Like, it's like they're trying to, It's like they're Ohio State trying to coin the term the Ohio State coined. They copyrighted the word the. It's like they're trying to do that with synchronicity. They're trying to get it big and then copyright it. And it's like they overuse it. But the investigation overall starts to kind of turn away from Dr. David and then turn towards this woman who's been in prison. They get a lot of help from a lot of different names in the paranormal industry. And they also they're kind of working with these other guys during the time during this whole movie. Like the other guy, one guy goes out to a spot in the woods where he what was he doing? He was looking for something. Can't remember what he was led out somewhere in there, and there was helicopters flying over, and he was told he'd find a balloon, and there was a balloon there, and that was almost too perfect. So you can kind of, I would go ahead and discount that. I would discount that as something they set up because it's so kind of blatant, you know? It's kind of blatant that this is something they're using to make the documentary more, you know, tangible. The same thing with this. At the same time they get the letters from Dr. David, they also get letters from this Terry Rist, or they get these emails from, it's not letters, it's emails. I apologize. But they get these emails from Terry. And then all of that devolves even further because, you know, Terry Rist might be somebody else that they know and da-da-da. And then Indrid Cold starts to pop up a little bit at the end of the first season. And that takes place, you know, the second season kind of kicks off with that. I haven't watched the third season yet. I'm not going to lie. After the second season, I'm kind of like, I don't care anymore. Because, guys, I didn't find this documentary at all. You know, it seemed very far-fetched at the beginning. I'll go into that. But in season two, it dives into, you know, the girl that they start getting letters from in jail. They dive a little bit further into that. She claims to have a connection to Indrid Cold. And they start going on. And in season two, they kind of go on this, or begin this search midway through the season. They switched away from Hopkinsville. They forget about Hellier and Hopkinsville. This little story about these goblins, these hobgoblins, that's what you were, you know, you're basing your documentary off of at the beginning, and you're showing these pictures of these hobgoblin like creatures as your go to, and you delve away from it to go after Indrid Cold. I don't understand that. I don't understand why they chose to do that. It's kind of an odd decision. I don't know why. Honestly, the shift from Hopkinsville to Indrid Cold, and I'm saying cold, it's odd. I wanted to specify that, though, because even I'm hearing it back and I'm going, I hope they're not trying to, because I know the name. I've been doing Mothman since that weird movie with Richard Gere, which was really nowhere near what Mothman was. I was like, oh, cool, they're going to, okay, that had nothing to do. The only thing that really tied in was kind of the Indrid Cold story a little bit, but it's not like that story and Mothman never really intersected. Not really. He references it, but he never, it, anyways, it never intersects like it does. And it's never Mothman claiming to be injured. So, I that part of the movie always confused me of why they did that. I mean, I know why, but why they kind of tied them together. And also thought we were going to see some like lights in the sky, like he would look at Mary, but no, or the minimum, you know, there was so like, there's so much, we're going to cover that story obviously, but there's so much there. There is so much there. So like he and Mary saw, would go out and watch these lights in the sky all the time. And that was so cool. But back to the story. Well, I mean, that's part of it because they're going after injured cold, and that's weird. Now I'm doing it on purpose to kind of cover for my lack of pronunciation. I think there's a, you know, it's three seasons. I don't know. I've lost interest. Because season two was just kind of weird enough that they just went from one extreme to another for no reason. And then, like, the whole thing about season one was the hobgoblins, and now we're going away from that and going, oh, well, Indrid Cold, and, you know, we got to go find him. He's in trouble. He's being, you know, and he may be in captivity and messaging us. Okay. Well, I'm turning it off. You know, that's exactly what I did. I went, all right, well, I don't care about this because there's no way you're in communication with Indrid Cold. Sorry. I don't know, man. It was such a bad documentary. I don't see how anybody. The beginning part's okay, but then as soon as the story kind of goes awry and you're like, well, David's not communicating with us anymore. So you don't know where this guy lived. You have no way of communicating with him whatsoever after that email. He's refusing to communicate with you. Your case is dead then. And now you're just going to Hellier to see if you can find out about David. Sure, but unless you know exactly where he is and unless you know exactly how to get in touch with him, he could disappear. Also, if you were in Hellier, you should have asked them about this David guy. Like, do you have any Dr. Davids down here? Because these people will know. They'll know. But it's just one of those where I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't. It was very... It jumped around a lot. It was never really cohesive. I mean, honestly, never really cohesive. So, I couldn't stick around for the rest of season two. And if there's a season three, I don't care. I'm going to be honest. I don't, because it's not... I'm gonna be an outsider. I'm just gonna say that it's not real. This is one where the case is kind of. I feel like this case is a little too far fetched. They have no further communications. It seems like a great idea for a documentary about a real event that happened, and you're just kind of parroting it. And I don't mean parroting. I mean parrot. Okay, let me rephrase. Let me be clear and enunciate. You're parroting an event that happened, not parodying. It's not a parody of. They're parroting this event. They are copying this event and putting it in a future time. And one of the things that clued me in that it was kind of BS was the letter from Dr. David being the basic of basic communications from him. Really had all the hallmarks of another letter that was sent from Armitage to Akeley in the Whisperers in the Darkness story from H.P. Lovecraft. in that story, these crab-like insect creatures have, you know, they've been putting people's brains in inside of these mechanical things, and, you know, it's really great story anyways. This guy is investigating these creatures because they popped up in a flood in Virginia where they have all these caves and, you know, the hills, you know, basically being as secluded as they are because people who live in the hills keep themselves private and they own all this vast swaths of land. So nobody goes out there. But in it, one of the guys that owns land in that area has been seeing them for a while and is kind of having some issues. So he writes a letter into this, you know, professor, and says, you know, hey, look, on, you know, basically on what you said about these clawed creatures that showed up, you know, who knows? It's these, you know, strange myths. I think that what you seek is a little stranger, though. You know, here, let me tell you about it. These creatures that come around, they make noises outside my window. They frighten my dogs. They frighten me. They leave tracks outside on the ground, and they're not human. All the same accounts in this letter that David emailed them, or this email that David sent them. And I know that Greg and Dana are big H.P. Lovecraft fans. I mean, all paranormal people are, because he had a great way. I mean, to be fair, he was racist, and that is very problematic, and you shouldn't be racist. I'm one of those people that I separate the art from the artist. His writing was very different for horror, and I think that's why people still, you know, allow it to be published, is because he wrote horror movie, or horror, well, not horror movies. Many movies respond off of his writings, but he wrote horror fiction beautifully to where it would pull you into the story and you would get sucked into the world. And the problem with that world is you might not escape because of these elder gods and these elder beings. And it's very cool and very cryptic, but he was a probably a very racist guy. So bad, but his writings were good, but he was bad. Very bad to think that way. His contributions to writing are good. His attitude was bad. His mentality and his morality was bad. So anyways, moving on. The letter is very Lovecraftian in that. It's very Whispers in the Darkness. It sounds exactly like that letter. So that's why I call a little BS on that. They don't really get any further in depth into the Kentucky Goblin case. They kind of go ghost hunting and then alien hunting a little bit, instead of, you know, just maybe investigating some old caves and mines. But, I mean, realistically, they shouldn't, because they don't really know anybody out there, and there could be a lot of dangerous people, a lot of dangerous animals. Caves and mines are homes of bears. People find bears in Kentucky and Tennessee, folks. Don't mess around out there in those hollers and those caves and everything. Have guns. Anyways, and they kind of jump around. Like, I think Micah Hank shows up in it for a little bit. But it's just so beyond a little ridiculous. And then this hunt for Indrid Cold being in captivity and trying to reach out to him and talk to him, to jump from hobgoblins to that. But this is my opinion of this. Go watch it. Go form your own opinion. You know, this is why I do this. But anyways, boys and girls, that's it. That's the episode. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. And of course, as usual, thank you for going down this paranormal rabbit hole with me. Good night.